Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Chapter 21, Qualities of Sri Krishna. Verse 21-126. The person who follows the principles of Dharma and engages others in doing so, it also is called a virtuous man. Srila Prabhupada, religious. A person who personally practices the tenets of religion as they are enjoined in the Shastras, and who also teaches others the same principles, is called religious. Simply professing a kind of faith is not a sign of religiousness. One must act according to religious principles, and by his personal example he should teach others. Such a person is to be understood as religious. Right? You don't really think, oh no, but if he practices, but if he doesn't teach, then he'd be religious. But generally speaking, that's not the case. Most people like to teach, but not practice. Like that. That's generally the position. 2.1.127. An example. O king of the cowherd men, the bull of Dharma with four legs under your protection has flourished to such an extent that, going everywhere in the three worlds, it has forcibly gobbled up the grass of irreligion. Interesting. Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna was present on this planet, there was no irreligion. In this connection, Narada Muni once addressed Krishna jokingly. My dear lord of the cowherd boys, your bulls are the representation of religion, while eating grass from the pasturing ground and moving on their four legs, right, because you have the four legs of Dharma, right, have certainly eaten up all the grass of irreligion. End quote. In other words, by the grace of Krishna, religious principles were so well cared for that hardly any irreligious activities could be found. Srila Jiva Goswami. This and the next verse are joking statements of Narada. Examples of performing Dharma and engaging others in Dharma are given in the reverse order. The present verse is an example of engaging others in Dharma. Gopendra is a pun. The normal meaning is king of the cowherd men, but Gopa can also mean protector of the earth, since Go means earth and Pa means protector. Thus, Gopendra means the best of the protectors of the earth, or the best of the kings. Amar Kosh says, Gopa Bhupa. Gopa means king. Another example. Right? So it has all these meanings, but we don't take the means where we want, we can use it, but you see it's used in a joking way. So the element of opulence is then used, but to add to the flavor of the sweetness. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that the majesty aspect is not there, it just becomes part of the fun in sweetness. So, in a sense, yeah. But the other way around, then you'll get the majesty, but the sweetness will be restricted. Srila Jiva Goswami. This and the next verse are joking statements. Oh, we just read that one. 2.1.128. Another example. O Mukunda, you have performed so many sacrifices and continually attracted all the devatas, that the wives of the devatas, feeling suffering and separation from their husbands, are praying to Buddha, your ninth avatar, to appear to stop sacrifices. That's so funny. Srila Prabhupada, it is said that because Krishna was constantly performing various types of sacrifices and was dividing the demigods from the higher planetary systems, the demigods were almost always absent from their consorts. Therefore, the wives of the demigods, regretting the absence of their husbands, began to pray for the appearance of Lord Buddha, Krishna's ninth incarnation, who appears in the age of Kali. In other words, instead of being pleased that Lord Krishna had come, he began to pray for Lord Buddha, who is the ninth incarnation, because Lord Buddha stopped the ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices recommended in the Vedas in order to discourage animal killing. The demigod's wives thought that if Lord Buddha appeared, all kinds of sacrifices would be stopped, and thus their husbands would not be invited to such ceremonies and would not be separated from them. Sometimes it is inquired, why don't the demigods from the higher planetary systems come to this earth planet nowadays? The plain answer is that since Lord Buddha appeared and began to deprecate the performance of sacrifice in order to stop animal killing on this planet, the process of offering sacrifices has been stopped, and the demigods do not care to come here anymore. So it worked.
Right. Some people find it hard to believe that an incarnation of Vishnu would preach non-Vedic principles.
Well, if people are misusing the Vedic, then you have to take them away from that for a while until then you can start again. Because you have to understand this, we're working on this universal time. So they're outside of that Vedic concern for about 2,500 years. And then after that, it comes back in. So if you're working on a cycle of Kali Yuga being, 432,000 years, what's 2,500 years? So it's just, you have to understand on the universal scale, it's not very long.
Right.
It's just like, let's say, the child or the student is not behaving properly. So then you might stick them in a position of no activity, because any activity will be crazy. Mm-hmm. So therefore, no activity, then they calm down. Now you can engage them in positive activity. That's what's being used. It's not an ideal position, but you have to use what works.
Right.
So at the time, that was the attitude. So therefore, then you remove the Vedas.
So, in the case of the Mayavadis, Krishna just had Shiva do the dirty work as Shankaracharya.
Well, the thing is, because he's the lord of the mode of ignorance, and that he's going to bewilder, then it's natural that that would be what he would do.
Right.
Right. He deals with the gunners, so he can deal with these guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So, chapter 22, qualities of Krishna further explained. 2.1.129. A hero is a person who is energetic in fighting and skillful in the use of weapons. Srila Prabhupada. Heroic. Person who is very enthusiastic in military activities, an expert in releasing different kinds of weapons, is called heroic. Right? So they're enthusiastic, they're comfortable in that. Srila Jiva Goswami. For the purpose of giving variety to the examples, the one warrior is described in two ways. This will be understood to be the method later as well. Because you give the different angles, then you understand that. Because if he's energetic, but he's not skillful, you wouldn't call him a hero. You just say he's an enthusiast. And if he was skillful, but not necessarily energetic, you wouldn't also call him a hero. So you need both of these qualities. 2.2.1.130. An example of enthusiasm in fighting is illustrated first. O destroyer of Agha, destroyer of sin, with your trembling trunk-like arms, submerging yourself in the lake of the expensive battlefield, playing in the forest of lotuses composed of your enemies, you appear to be playing like the king of the elephants. Srila Prabhupada. Regarding Krishna's heroism in fighting, there's the following statement. My dear killer of the enemy, just as the elephant, while taking bath in the lake, destroys all the lotus stems within the water by swinging its trunk, so simply by moving your arms, which are compared to the trunks of elephants, you have killed so many lotus-like enemies. Right? So they like to explain in this pleasant way, this sweet way. This is the uniqueness that we see, is that is there that makes the pastimes of Krishna Loka different. like that. Well, in Vaikuntha, you'll see is that those prayers are always about his greatness, his grandeur, his control, his like that. So they'll generally be, they may use the poetics, but it'll still stay within the formality. So you see there's a different flavor. Does that make sense? 2.1.131. An example of being expert in handling weapons. Within a second, one could not see any soldier among the ferocious phalanx of Akshahinis of Jarasandha. Any person who was not bitten by the snake like out. Any person who was not bitten by. Oh.
Could not see any person who has not been bitten.
Yes, okay. Within a second, one could not see any soldier among the ferocious phalanx of Akshahinis of Jarasandha.
No.
Who was not bitten by the snake like arrows of the I don't really need this.
Yeah.
Any person.
Another
again.
Person.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada. Regarding Krishna's expertise in releasing weapons. When Jarasandha and 13 divisions of soldiers attacked Krishna's army, they were unable to hurt even one soldier on the side of Krishna. This was due to Krishna's expert military training. This is unique in the history of military art, right? So Krishna goes out with a small group. They have a bigger group, but he doesn't need. He goes out with a small group. And then when he starts fighting, every soldier on Jarasandha's side is being attacked by an arrow. At the same, you know, he's just so expert he is. But at the same time, is everyone on Jarasandha's side is lost except Jarasandha himself. Everyone, down to the man, every time. So 17 times, this is what he did. But Krishna's group, they didn't even get injured. Right? So that's what he's saying. This is unique in the history of military art. You just don't see that. Because right? In other battles, you'll see is that people are getting injured and this, like Prajumna was attacked and then he was taken off the battlefield and then when he woke up, he got upset and then he went back on the battlefield and like this. So you see is that people are getting injured. But here, no one got injured. So it's just like, they had front row seats, right? Because otherwise you could watch from the fort. But it's not as close. So you're right there. You can see Krishna fighting, the others there, and like that. So that's, you know, so that's a, how you say, the best seats in the house for, you know, the other warriors. Right? 2.1.132. A person who cannot tolerate the suffering of others is called compassionate. But, so you understand here is they're showing these two different things. And Krishna has all these. He can manifest them together or they can manifest them separately. So that's the point, is there's variety. Even within one quality, there's variety. Does that make sense? A person who cannot tolerate the suffering of others is called compassionate. Srila Prabhupada. 32. Compassionate. A person who is unable to bear another's distress is called compassionate. 2.1.133. An example of Karuna. I offer my respects to the compassionate son of the Yadus, who, like the sun, made all the king's eyes blossom with joy. Those kings had blinded themselves with tears, arising from the impenetrable darkness of suffering caused by being imprisoned by Jarasandha. Srila Prabhupada. Krishna's compassion for distressed persons was exhibited when he released all the kings imprisoned by Maghendra. While dying, Grandfather Bhishma praised to Krishna and described him as the sun which eradicated darkness. The kings imprisoned by Maghendra were put into dark cells, and when Krishna appeared there, the darkness immediately disappeared, as if the sun had risen. In other words, although Maghendra was able to imprison so many kings, upon the appearance of Krishna, they were all released. Krishna released the kings out of a sincere compassion for them. Srila Jiva Goswami. These are the words of Bhishma when he was dying. Swayam indicates that the kings blinded themselves with their tears of suffering. Grini means compassionate. According to Amar Kosh, Jugupsa Karune Grina. Grina means disgust and compassion. Right, so you're disgusted with one thing and you're compassionate. Right? They go together. Does that make sense? Because you're compassionate because the situation is not good. Yeah. 2.1.134. Another example. I offer my respects to the compassion of the Lord, who, because of Bhishma's remembrance of him while laying on the bed of sharp arrows, immediately appeared. Beyond his own control, he rushed towards Bhishma while forgetting his position as God, his body bathed in a shower of tears. Srila Prabhupada, Krishna's compassion also was exhibited when Grandfather Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows, which had been shot through his body. While lying in this position, Bhishma was very anxious to see Krishna, and thus Krishna appeared there. Upon seeing the pitiable condition of Bhishma, Krishna began speaking with tears in his eyes. Not only was he shedding tears, but he also forgot himself in his compassion. Therefore, instead of offering obeisances to Krishna directly, devotees offer obeisances to his compassionate nature. Actually, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is very difficult to approach him. But the devotees, taking advantage of his compassionate nature, which is represented by Radharani, always pray to Radharani for Krishna's compassion. Yeah, so Krishna gets so absorbed that he even forgets himself in this. This is about that relationship and all these things. Srila Jiva Goswami. I offer respects to the compassionate nature of Krishna, who appeared because Bhishma thought of him. How was that compassionate manifest? Krishna, out of great haste to see Bhishma, forgot his position as the Lord. Kavalita Atma Vishpur Taye. Such was Krishna's feelings for Bhishma, right? So we see this is unique in Krishna Loka. Because in Vaikuntha, then you won't see this. He's always Sarvajna. He's always aware of his position because that's his attitude. I am God. So that won't be forgotten. And all the devotees, that's how they want to see him. He's the Supreme. He's God. He's the Absolute. He's the most perfect personality. And so then they approach him in that way. But we see here in Goloka, then we see is that even in Dwarka, even though it's still Vaikuntha, he'll at times forget, because that's part of the thing. It's majesty and sweetness together. So sometimes you just see more of the sweetness, sometimes more of the majesty. But generally, there's more sweetness. That's why the point is there. Otherwise, if it's not different, if it's not unique, what's the need to manifest it separate from Vaikuntha? Right? Because majesty is already there, very nicely done. So then here is that because it's sweetness, but it still has some majesty to it. Right? So that makes sense. Because it's human-like pastime. So he's not as God himself, even though he is. Right? 2.1.135. Yes. We didn't. Okay. I offer respects to the compassionate nature of Krishna, who appeared because Bhishma thought of him. How was that compassionate manifest? How was that, by the way, saying compassion manifest? Krishna, out of great haste to see Bhishma, forgot his position as the Lord. Kavalita Atma Vishpurtaye. Such was Krishna's feeling for Bhishma. Right? So that he forgot his position means there's so much affection. That's the point. 2.1.135. The person who worships Guru, Brahmins, and the elderly is called a respectful person. Srila Prabhupada, respectful. A person who shows adequate respect to a spiritual master, a Brahmin, an old person, is to be understood as being respectful. 2.1.136. Krishna first offered respects to the lotus feet of his Guru. He then offered respects to his father and elderly brother. Then, with folded hands and words, he offers respects to the elders of the Yadu dynasties in proper order. Srila Prabhupada. When superior persons assemble before Krishna, Krishna first of all offers respects to his spiritual master, then to his father, then to his elderly brother, Balaram. In this way, Lord Krishna, the lotus-eyed, was completely happy and pure at heart in all of his dealings. So he'll follow the etiquette and go through. That's why it's there. Otherwise, how do you know who to deal with? So if it's there in Shastra, this is how it works, and you deal nicely, and then everybody's very comfortable. Right? So if they're very qualified, it wouldn't matter. But if they're not qualified, it matters. You know. So therefore, then, since you're doing human pastimes, you're following in the context that it matters. And so then he follows all these things. 2.1.137. So that's why they're there. So the thing is, oh no, we don't care. You know, Vanchas, Prabhu, Vanchas, and all that kind of stuff. It's not that grand. like that. A person who is mild due to his excellent nature is called compliant by the intelligent. Srila Prabhupada. Liberal. 34, liberal. Any person who is by nature very mild is called liberal. Right? Because they're mild, they're able to accommodate and all that, things like that. That's the point. It doesn't see is that they're able to accommodate, they're natural, they're gentle. That's the meaning of liberal. So when it says the Brahmins are liberal, and that this is what it means. It doesn't mean that they'll give up Shastric injunctions because somebody feels like doing something different. That's not what's there. But they'll listen, they'll try to convince, they'll try to help, they'll do it in a very nice way, like that. Does that make sense? Shoshilya. Oh. Srila Jiva Goswami. He whose character is very soft, Soumya, due to his excellent nature, Shoshilya, is very compliant. Excellent nature, Shoshilya. So the head pujari in our temple was named Shoshilya. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it again. 21138. The Supreme Lord, who is pure-hearted by his very nature, does not see the serious offenses of his servant. But he accepts even a little service as a great thing. He does not find fault even in those of low character. Srila Prabhupada. A statement by Uddhava after the Shamataka jewel plundering confirms that Krishna is so kind and favorable that if a servitor is accused even of great offenses, Krishna does not take this into consideration. He simply considers the service that is rendered by his devotee. Right, so that's the uniqueness of the Vaishnava. Because it's not about the rules, it's about pleasing Krishna. And so Krishna, this is how he deals. That's where then the Vaishnavas, they also take on those same kind of qualities. Right? Because these are within the 50 qualities that the jiva can have. So that's the natural. So as devotees, then manifest these. That's the thing. What service has been rendered, so therefore then how to deal.
So then the desire for retribution and punishment is not completely in line.
That's not within these 50 qualities, no. Like that. You know, it's just like anything, it goes by. It's just like somebody was walking along, they were somehow or another, not very careful, they were kind of out in the bush, out in the savannah kind of thing. And as they go by, they got somehow or another too close, maybe they didn't see or that, they got too close to a badger. Right? And as they go by, they disturb the badger. And so the badger, as badger does, they come and lock themselves onto your boot. Right? Because they're not very big, so if they go to bite you, they're going to bite your ankle. Right? And so when you're out in that kind of environment, you're always wearing nice leather boots, for that purpose. And so then the person walked for the next, I don't know how long, like possibly a kilometer or something, with this badger still, biting onto his ankle and making all kinds of, nasty, like this, even though he can't do anything. But and the guy's just dragging him along because you can't get them off. Until they let go, you can't get rid of them. So that's, the desire for retribution, like that. It's just like you have the term badgering somebody. Yeah, it's just that you constantly go, you just won't let it go. You won't let something, you won't move on. That's badgering.
But that's not liberal.
No, it's not. It's amazing. It's not. It's like a,
so it's conservative?
I don't know if it's that. It's just harassing. Like that. So it's not one of the qualities of Krishna. So. Like that. So that point is, you see what they've done, and then that in consideration, then you consider what's the proper situation, proper dealings. But to just say, oh, they've done something wrong, so anything good being done is all thrown out, so now with a clean slate, now we can deal however we like. It's not liberal. That makes sense. And so this fault is from all sides. Conservatives and liberals both have this problem. It's just the material qualifications that we're taking it that rules is what makes things work, And so if you don't follow the rules, then nothing will work. And if nothing works, I don't get anything good out of it. And I always want something good out of it. Therefore, people who don't follow the rules, then I'm going to be upset with them. Because maybe this individual, it doesn't have a direct effect on me, but, you know, down the chain, it could. So therefore, we don't want to, you know, so we're going to set an example. As if that ever did anybody any good. That how you say? That attitude of, we're going to set an example with him, has brought down kingdoms, brought down families, has brought down governances. It's brought down, it always brings, whoever's using it, it always brings them down. Always. So, it's not a good one, just if you want to learn from history. So we see here is that Krishna, he's seeing is that it's the service has been rendered, then people make mistakes, right? We're in the material world, that's already a mistake. So if we're going to go by on, we're going to start with, you know, the mistake, then we have to start, you're in the material world. So therefore, you're a rat bag from the get-go. So that means the person who you're trying to judge, but the person who's judging, and everybody else who's judging, they're all rat bags. If we go by that, if we want to use that at the time. But if we go by what service is rendered, because that's the actual natural position of the entity, right? Then that position of service, then you have to see what service has been rendered, and then judge and then everybody can be involved accordingly. Does that make sense? So, therefore, judgment appears means those who have done the kind of service you've done. Otherwise, it's not that. But if you make it, if you clear it to zero, then it means anybody can jump on the bandwagon. But if you go by who's done like that, then that's the one who comments like that. If we're going to be liberal. If you want to be archaic, do whatever you like. Then it's, you know, you get, you just have to pass out torches and pitchforks and then go for it. Yes.
One type of apparatus is the apparatus comes from boxes which we do with mistakes. Boxes.
No, that's not apparat. That's an artist. See, aparad means is that you're committing an offense. That's a personal dealings and that kind of thing. Bhakti means it's just, you know, let's say somebody's not chanting very nicely, or, you know, he forgets to chant, or, you know, he makes mistakes in the practice of bhakti.
And Krishna can forgive this type of
an. What would you say? From this verse, what would you say? Yes. Or is it that as soon as you got up late and, you know, and you came out, and as soon as you step outside, then that thunderbolt comes along and zot, and then there's a little pile of ash there. And then your neighbor goes, yeah, I knew it was coming. with satisfaction walks off to the temple. You know, and as he's walking along, he sees the new bhakta. Hey, could you clean that mess up over there? Like that, yeah. Okay.
What happens if the bhakta, they are employed and something is not ready, the pure bhakti for them? Because if the bhakta are employed not for the perfection of them life but of the group, are there an incident in the future?
No, but the point is you still have to see what service has been rendered and not take it that. See, is if we take it that, oh, this is wrong, and the devotional service doesn't count as part of the equation, then that would mean the devotional service actually has less value than the wrong. So when someone does something wrong, then that is the real point of judgment. And the devotional service is just an incidental on the side. But it's no, devotional service is the main thing, and then what goes wrong, then you have to consider that. So then you just have to look at only that part of it, and that's what it takes to just correct that. You know, it's just like, let's say you come in, they've cleaned the kitchen, and they've left a pot on the table, right on the counter. You know, and then the chef walks in, and then he sees the pot here. Now, according to him, this is a calamity, and everything should be shut down, everything fired. You know, you burn down the restaurant. You know, blow up a hole there, so there's not even the dirt's not there, like that. And, you know, it's just like that. So, the whole thing is. But the actual point is that if the person now has not been doing good service, you know, there isn't any, you know, they haven't properly engaged in anything, and they're leaving the pot, then it's just a symptom, maybe this person's not qualified, if you've shown them. But if they've been shown, and they've done good jobs, but today they left the pot there, then there must be something else going on. So therefore you call, and, you know, we have this, and the cleanliness, and all that, you know, why is this pot here? You know, and then you may find out that either they spaced out, or they got a call then, or, you know, something happened, they ran off to the toilet, or like that. And so then you have to, you start from the service and then look back. Because if we look at just what's wrong, then it's so easy to, you know, find fault. But if you start from what's right, then in comparison, then you see, well, actually, maybe not so much is wrong. You know, it still needs to be corrected. But how you go about it may be less severe, yes, than if you start with the service. So we see Krishna always starts with the service. And then what's wrong, that part has to be corrected and nothing more. Sense? Yes.
Other part is that excellent guna is a part, one of the gunas. So
one of the gunas is excellent gunas.
Yes. So that is the sausilya. So that's why it's called specifically sausilya is one of the gunas. Because it doesn't have any bad gunas. No durguna.
Okay. Okay, so because not having any bad gunas, then his character is soft.
Soft is another guna. So, but because it doesn't have any...
No, but it says, whose character is very soft due to his excellent nature.
Yeah.
But if it's soft due to something else, then it might be given another name. Yeah. I mean, some good qualities always are good, but it's just a matter of the context you see in them. Then you know, just like the heroic means that they're enthusiastic and they're expert. You know, so the combinations make, because otherwise you're dealing with the same substance. So it's just the depending upon the particular manifestation of the Shakti, it has a particular name. But it's still one Shakti. So okay. Srila Jiva Goswami, this is a statement in a letter of Uddhava to Akrura after he stole the Shamantaka jewel and went to Kashi. Right? Because they were trying to bring him back. Because then Akrura, he went to Kashi. He left Dwarka because he felt he was, you know, just had behaved so badly. He was feeling bad. So then he went there. Then they were seeing all inauspicious kind of signs, because it was seen, the history exactly I don't remember, but somehow or another Akrura and his father were considered, just by them being wherever they were, it became auspicious. So then people were saying, oh, because Akura has left, then there's a problem here. Right? And so then Krishna wants it to be that he can come back and everything will just continue as normal. But it has to be, there has to be something there, because otherwise something's wrong, so then there has to be this aspect of the auspiciousness. So then Uddhava, then he sends a letter, and then Akura and all, they come back. Right? So it's just a nice pastime of the Lord, so you appreciate. So why would it be there? Because now if he's stolen the Shamantaka jewel, now according to the contemporary, just mundane understanding, then he should have no good qualities. So if he leaves Dwarka, then, you know, it's good riddance, right? You know, it's better, like that. You know, things got better once he left. But we see as it didn't. Why does that mean? Because he still has all these auspicious qualities, because he's a devotee. So even though something went wrong, he's still a devotee. Does that make sense? So one has to consider all that. So then by this pastime, then Krishna brings this out.
But if we continue this path of thought and take it to the contemporary, the person who is a devotee and still commits a mistake or something, he himself thinks that he's not a devotee.
Yes, and but that doesn't mean like everybody that. Else, well, he thinks he's not a devotee.
No, but he behaves like that.
Like he's not a devotee.
Yeah.
No, but thinking I'm not a devotee is supposed to create a humility. It doesn't, and that if I'm not a devotee, then you're thinking of that I'm a living entity who should be a devotee and I'm not acting as one, so I feel humble. But if he takes it that I'm not a devotee, so therefore now I can do whatever I like, then that's there. But is that coming directly just from them, or is also the encouragement of others that he's also not a devotee? Yes, because there is also the thing, it's also based on a standard thing of false ego. If everybody says I'm bad, then I'm going to be bad.
Really bad.
Yeah, just I'll show what bad is, So like this, but if everybody's compassionate and like this, then and supportive, then we may not see them take that tactic. Because otherwise, why would they want to do that? Right? Because they feel bad, but then others are taking advantage of that and trying to, make it like they're the ones that are, it's about them. Because this says, he's the person who's done something wrong. So that means the discussion is actually about them. In connection with devotional service and Krishna. And then, in that way, connected to the community. But when the individuals in the community make it about themselves, that they're establishing justice and this and that, it's not about the person. So then where's the compassion? Why so special about this? So if that's all it is, and that they, no matter how much you've done, they're going to deal with you as if you've done nothing, then, what's the point? So you can't put too much blame on the individual. Not that means it's their choice to do that. And they will get a reaction for doing that because the material world is not going to be any better now than it was before. So they'll still have the same problems in the material world. But it's not that the community can think that they did a great job like that. They should also understand, if they're servants, then how would Krishna and the acharyas want this dealt with? Yes, the point may be wrong, you have to deal with it, but how to deal it in such a way that it just solves the problem and doesn't create more. So, 2.1.139. The person who is devoid of arrogance is called modest. Srila Prabhupada. 35. Gentle. Any person who neither becomes impudent nor exhibits a puffed up nature is called gentle. Right. So, here that's important because we see is he doesn't become impudent, so he doesn't deal properly, or puffed up and just thinks he's so big. Because we might say, well, they're together, but there's difference. Because impudent means you don't respect others. Well, puffed up, you can respect everybody else, but you are respecting yourself also in a very grand way, like that. So when that doesn't happen, so that's a gentle person. They have qualities, they have position, they have authority, they have results, but they're not getting proud or impudent. That's gentle. But something goes right for you and immediately become impudent or puffed up, that's pretty standard. It's not gentle. 2.1.140. An example of Magha Kavya. Seeing that Yudhishthira wanted to alight in haste from his chariot on seeing Krishna, Krishna himself, by getting down from his chariot, first out of great respect for Yudhishthira, showed more modesty than anyone else. Oh no. He probably got out from his chariot first, out of great respect for Yudhishthira, showed more modesty than anyone else. Right? Because he's the Supreme Lord. Yeah, no, that's the whole thing. That's why I always appreciate the British, how you say, punctuation. Because they don't have this phobia of commas.
Yeah, Oxford comma.
Hmm?
The Oxford comma.
Yeah. Yeah, you can put it in wherever, any place where there can be a natural break, you can put one. Because it also gives more rise to dramatic reading and stuff like that. While the American is it's like, if you don't put it there, it absolutely can't function. That's the only reason you put it. So in a place where maybe you put two or three, they may put zero or only one. Because that's why you see is that we always have to sometimes go back and stop to read it, reread it, because as you go, you start to see all this different. Like that. So I'm not sure. Maybe from the American you get used to it and you actually become good at it so you don't need the punctuation, but I haven't.
I had a friend in America. She said that if you see somebody writing without the commas, means they are below 30 years of age or something.
Okay.
Previously, I don't know, guys, you probably studied.
Okay. Yeah, but it's just the thing, they try to reduce everything as much as possible, which is good, it's efficient. But then the problem is it could help. In other words, you put it there, it may not be so necessary, but it can be helpful. Then you would put it.
So I use Oxford Commas all the time. So I've had editors tell me, anybody who reads this is going to pause there anyway, you don't need the comma. And I'm like, well, I want to put it there. So.
Yeah, because the point is that says anybody who knows how to read, it says, yeah, you know how to read, and so you can vouch for everybody?
Right.
So if everybody knows how to read, you know, and that, then why do we need an editor? You know, so it's like, you know, why isn't everybody an editor? So.
But how would you know how to read? It depends, you know, what's the meaning.
Maybe it's the way they construct the sentences and stuff. I don't know.
Because in Russian, it's very strict.
Yeah, but then you have grammar. You have to remember, English doesn't have grammar, really. They impose a grammar based because there is an eternal concept of grammar, but English doesn't have a grammar. It's whatever's used that becomes grammar. You know, it's just like a word that everybody starts to use. Even though it's not used like that, it's not in the dictionary. The next printing, it's in the dictionary.
Yeah, but now it's in all the languages.
Yes, but that's the whole point. Every language is degrading. But that's the thing is, you know, Sanskrit, then it has a grammar, and accordingly, that's how you write. That's how you do things. You know, if you want to say, oh, no, we'll simplify, that's called Bengali. You know? You know, like that. Bengali, Braj Bhasha, these, you know, Gujarati. These are languages where you've simplified and you're not using all the strict grammar.
Maybe Creole. They don't have writing. Only spoken language. Simplified French.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like that. So that's English. But the thing is with the Mlechas, then their pride is such that they want to claim that they have this great thing like that. So you can do, and you can put it all together, but technically it's not that scientific. So there's much more grandiose, you know, in discussions about something that it's not actually so well structured. The point is language has its natural construction. And so anything that they're doing that is following that, then that's good. But they have to understand it's not that it's coming from English, it's coming from language. That's the thing. Because otherwise, according to the grammar, it's very hard to explain everything. You know, there's a feeling that it should be there, but they don't know why. You know, but in where you have a strict grammar, then it's obvious it goes there. So it becomes very much a feeling and all that. Because that's the thing, is especially in English, if you don't put the punctuation, it has totally different meanings. So this whole idea is, no, but they'll stop there naturally. No, but there's two options. You know, it's not necessarily. Because here, Krishna himself, by getting down from his chariot, first out of great respect for Yudhishthira, then second out of, right? It could work that way. So I won't know until I find out that there's no second. That's how I knew there's something's wrong. It could have easily been that as a second, as a thing. Or Krishna himself, by getting down from his chariot first, first, out of great respect for Yudhishthira, showed more modesty than anyone else. So the emphasis on the first, he got down. Yeah. So then out of there, then you know it's... So it's, and there was the Krishna himself, by getting down from his chariot first, showed more modesty than anyone else. So that's the whole point, is that the comma shows that there's something in between that's modifying what's there, but the sentence could function without it. But like this, then it doesn't. You know. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that in English you can get very... Some people who so are expert at writing, then they could put it together in such a way that may naturally run. Then that's something very special, like that. So generally, like Jayadvaitamar is going to do that. You know, it's like a small phrase as a full paragraph. You know, it makes the point, you know, so wow, okay. You know, so he can do stuff like that. But in general, it's, you know.
Maharaj teaches a class called the Kama Sutra.
Okay.
C-O-M-M-A.
Yeah.
Kama Sutra. And he's also a fan of, instead of having really long, you know, modified sentences like this, he just put it as simply as possible with fewer commas and then, you know.
Okay.
But Srila Prabhupada, he uses...
Because there's the British and stuff like that. Because depending on how you put it, means here it works okay. But now when they start to translate what the Acharya, because Prabhupada's knowing English and writing in English, but if you try to translate what the Goswamis write in their literature, they have sentences within sentences, points within points, points modifying a point that's modifying another point.
In literature, it was considered the high class if you can put all those things in one sentence. Means it's poetic.
Yeah, because then it's a big sentence. So you could have one sentence that's the size of this paragraph. Like that. And if you go back 100 years, that was very standard. And you could read it and it meant made sense.
So it's classic.
It's classic, yeah. But now the idea is short. They try to make it into separate sentences. And if you can, that's great. But the problem is, as soon as you make it into separate sentences, you don't see the connection between the points being made. So then it doesn't actually work.
It's efficiency.
Yes. It's efficiency.
But deficient efficiency.
Yeah, yes. you can't understand what's going on.
The
but
goal is efficiency.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing. So generally you'll see is what's been edited in Prabhupada's books is generally the trouble will come up in the Sanskrit because it would be translated. And knowing the Sanskrit, you understand what it means. But someone who doesn't know the Sanskrit, when they go to read it without the proper punctuation, then you won't catch what's there. So, yeah. So then it's just a matter of going back because, you know, many times you're getting these documents that they haven't been run through the full editorial process. So now and again do they come up with this. Srila Prabhupada. An example of Krishna's gentle behavior was manifested when he was coming to the arena of the Rajasuya sacrifice arranged by Maharaj Yudhishthira, Krishna's older cousin. Maharaj Yudhishthira knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was attempting to get down from his chariot to receive Krishna. But before Yudhishthira could get down, Lord Krishna got down from his own chariot and immediately fell at the feet of the king. Even though, like, notice here it says, fell at the feet of the king rather than fell at the feet of Yudhishthira. Because otherwise, why? You know, the king. Oh, yeah, that's right. Even though Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he never forgets to show social etiquette in his dealings. Right? So that's the, you know, so we can see is that in one area, these group of qualities are all connected together. You know, it's like there's one area where it was all connected with language and speaking and communication and that. So here you see is these are all connected together. Back to before, he shows, you know, the proper etiquette and everything like that. And it had that. So all these together, you see. 2.1.141. A person is called bashful who is shy when praised by others, or when he thinks others are aware of his secret love affairs. This is because of modesty or his unfathomable nature. Srila Prabhupada, shy. A person who sometimes exhibits humility and bashfulness is called shy. Srila Jiva Goswami. He acts shyly when he thinks that his secret love affairs are known by others. He also shows shyness when praised by others. Such a person is called bashful. This is because of his modesty, shalinatvena, or by his unfathomable nature. The example follows. 2.1.142. So we see, you know, it's a natural quality that we see even in the material world, amongst the material, that this comes up. From Lalita Madhava. All glories to the enemy of Madhu, who made Govardhan Hill shake slightly by the weight of glancing upon the expanse of the gopis' upraised breasts, and who hung his head in shame when he saw Balaram smiling before him while he was being praised by the fearful cowherd men. Right, so here's an example where both are happening at once. So the full taste of modesty is happening at one time because it has these two aspects. Right, so it generally would happen at two different occasions. But here we see in the Vrindavan Leela, so he gets that full taste of this modesty for this bashfulness, then both of them are happening at once. Right? And so the cowherd men will think he's bashful because they're praising him. Srila Prabhupada. As described in the Lalita Madhava, Krishna's shyness was manifest when he lifted Govardhan Hill by the little finger of his left hand. Right. So notice how also when Prabhupada opens these things, he gives it's a thesis. Mm-hmm. He gives a statement. You know, so you know the context of it. And then he's going to go through and explain it and everything very nicely. Otherwise, you wouldn't necessarily know what he's going to say. All of the gopis were observing Krishna's wonderful achievement, and Krishna was also smiling at seeing the gopis. When Krishna's glance went over the breast of the gopis, his hand began to shake. And on seeing his hand shake, all of the cowherd men underneath the hill became a little disturbed. Then there was a tumultuous roaring sound, and they all began to pray to Krishna for safety. At this time, Lord Balaram was smiling, thinking that these cowherd men had been frightened by the shaking of Govardhan Hill. But seeing Balaram smile, Krishna thought that Balaram had understood his mind in observing the breasts of the gopis, and immediately became bashful. Right? So Balaram's thing is that Krishna's holding up Govardhan Hill, and that the shaking is there, and then the noise is there, so they're thinking this is going to be a problem. And Balaram knows Krishna's doing this, it's going to go how Krishna wants. There's no question of any problem. So he's smiling at that they're thinking there'll be a problem, but Krishna's lifting Govardhan, it's not going to be a problem. But Krishna thought that he understood that, you know, that shaking came because of his glancing upon the gopis. So in this way then, you know, so even though it wasn't that, but that's how it was taken. And so then it was, yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami. From thinking of Krishna's tender body, the cowherd men became afflicted with fear. Bhayar thai. From seeing Krishna's power, they began to offer him praises. Supplications to encourage his valor. In front, he saw Balaram, who was smiling, because Balaram knew Krishna's powers, right? Because that's the actual thing that was going on, right? Because of his shy nature, he hung his head in embarrassment. All glories to that enemy of the Madhu demon. This means, may he appear within the hearts of the devotees with all his excellent qualities, right? So, this one, it does fully apply there, because the cowherd men are offering his prayers, and so Krishna is feeling bashful because of that. The word kila in the verse has the meaning of how is this happening? It is said, seeing the smiling Balaram, Krishna hung his head. Thus the word kila indicates that there is the doubt whether Balaram understood that the mountain was slightly moving because of Krishna's hand shaking from seeing the gopi's breast. Thus, because of the indication of doubt expressed by the word kila, it is understood that Balaram actually did not know the reason for Krishna's hands moving. But even though his love of the gopis was still secret, Krishna acted bashfully out of his very nature. This is the indication. It would have been improper for Balaram to observe Krishna looking at the gopis' breasts. Also, by Krishna's quality of inscrutability, he could make everyone unaware of his real feelings while actually maintaining those feelings, as we saw before. So he could do that. In a sense, it would be improper, so like that. So therefore, it comes up because it's a doubt. Like that, because Krishna's thing like that, because that's the whole thing. He's tasting that aspect of it at the same time as the cowherd men and their prayers and all that. The word kila, which indicates some doubt placed in the first half of the verse, can only indicate that perhaps the mountain was moving because of his shaking hand. Because of this, other interpretations are not accepted. Right, because otherwise it appears that one could go on and have so many understandings of this. Like that. 2.1.143. He who protects those who surrender is called protector of the surrendered. Srila Prabhupada, protector of surrendered souls. Krishna is the protector of all surrendered souls. 2.1.144. O fever, weapon. Though you are an offender in this battle, give up your fear, because the best of the Yadus, Krishna, acts like the moon towards those who completely surrender to him. Srila Prabhupada. Some enemy of Krishna's was enlivened with the thought that he needn't fear Krishna. Because if he simply surrendered unto him, Krishna would give him all protection. Krishna is sometimes compared to the moon, which does not hesitate to distribute its soothing rays, even on the houses of the Chandalas and other untouchables. And so his mercy can be given to anyone. So the point is, you surrender, then anybody can gain this mercy. Not the only someone who's highly qualified and then surrenders. No, just the surrendering itself is actually the natural position of the living entity. Then from being surrendered, naturally all good qualities develop. So this person, so the surrender is first, the qualities come after. 2.1.145. The person who is an enjoyer and is not touched by a trace of sorrow is called a happy person. Srila Prabhupada, happy. Any person who is always joyful and untouched by any distress is called happy. 2.1.146. The enjoyer is illustrated first. O best of the Yadus, the quality of your jeweled ornaments cannot even be imagined by Kuvera, the lord of wealth. It's just the quality of it. You know, the quality of the jewel itself, the ornaments themselves, how well it's made. Kuvera can't even imagine it. Yes?
Just before the other quality, you said that the person who is always happy is not disturbed by the distress. But
no, who is not? Because someone's happy and disturbed, so they're not necessarily called happy.
And if
and someone who's not disturbed and is not necessarily happy is not called happy.
When the demon approached Vraj, all the citizens begin to breathe quickly for when there are danger, and Krishna will act for protect them.
Yes, Krishna will protect them, because the previous one, because he protects all surrendered souls.
Is it the same here? By example, if we begin to feel an anxiety, if we are the state to be steady in happiness.
We'll see the examples being given. Means it's just like, let us say like this. Something's brought, very nice foodstuffs, right? But it falls into the category of, you know, it's nicely salted, it's got a full amount of sugar in it, it's been, you know, nicely cooked in butter or ghee or something like that, or it's got, you know, it's made of carbohydrates like this, okay? Now, a happy person can sit down, eat that, go, this is very nice, and get up and walk away and go wash their hands and they're comfortable. And you call them happy. Someone else goes, ooh, wow, this is great. Oh, but it's so rich. Oh, but it's so much sugar. So they can't. Don't call them happy. You understand? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura.
Krishna's not healthy.
Yes, he's not healthy. That's why he's happy.
The statement about how the cowherd men were encouraging Krishna when they saw it,
mm-hmm.
it just made me think of, that's where the, you know, when the guys are in the gym,
mm-hmm.
meatheads, and they're lifting, and when they're struggling, their friends will say, come on, you got it, that's where it came from.
Yeah. So all cowherds. Yeah, that came from. There was a previous one also, that, you know, because somebody figured out something, so they need to become bashful, or
right.
So things like that. And you see, is that all these are natural qualities.
Yeah.
That are there, and so the manifestation of that is because they all go back to Krishna. He's the reservoir. That's why we don't have a problem seeing good qualities and things like that. You know, it's just like you even see the acharyas in the commentaries. They'll use Shankaracharya's, you know, points that he's making. They make some valid points. They don't say, "Oh, anything he says is bogus."
Right.
It's that whatever he says that's right is right, and whatever he says that's wrong, that's bogus, like that. And so they'll use even his points that are correct. You know, to establish the truth.
Yeah, so the quality is the quality, whether it's no matter where it comes from.
Yeah, and so you appreciate it. But you have to see the context and everything else. And, the point is you appreciate it. That's why you're saying you start with the bhakti. So therefore you appreciate the devotion, you would appreciate the qualities, you appreciate the skills and knowledge. You know, so that's why the principle of respect is there, because you have to be able to appreciate these. the more you, the wider range of that, to that degree, that you're called respectful. Like someone may respect those who have knowledge and skills, but not those who have age or relatives or pious activities or like this. So.